All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Some good news about Thatcher Demko. Brock Besser left practice, and he's okay. Some good news, kind of. Canucks fans, some good news. On today's episode of Canucks Conversation, which, as always, is brought to you by the 2024 Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV that is designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but it still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain, whether it's rain, snow, mud, or your friend's questionable post-game recaps. The BZ4X will get you through it all. And folks, you will need no assistance on getting through today's episode of Canucks Conversation, because Harmon is in a well-lit Nashville hotel room. Is that the same one that I recognize that wallpaper, man? Is that the same one you were in before?
No, it's not. I stayed at this one at the draft, but in December, I stayed closer to Broadway, actually. But we're good here, because keep in mind, when I was in Nashville last time, it was December. So the problem that we ran into was show starts at 4 o'clock Central Time. So gradually the sun's going down and setting. And that was the problem, right? Because in December, you hit like 4:30 and it's pitch black. It's dark outside. Whereas now we're deep into April. We won't have to worry about that.
No, we will not have to worry about that. Although it did make for some very good content and for some very good memes. Okay, Harm, so you weren't on yesterday's show. Irf and I talked a lot about the loss, so I don't think you and I are going to have to do that. Update us on Canucks practice. You were there today. Brock Besser left with what we read was looked like he took a shot off the hand, and then he left practice. But Rick Tocchet confirming after practice that he's all good.
Yeah, it sounds like Besser's all fine. And to be honest, even when it initially happened, the Canucks were at the tail end of practice anyway. So I didn't take it as a sign of like Besser wasn't visibly in pain or anything. He just decided to come off the ice. And the team only a few minutes thereafter was done anyway. So it didn't initially cross my mind as a major concern anyway. Outside of that, because they did practice the power play, we got a chance to see that Elias Lindholm does appear to be moving up to play with the first unit in Connor Garland's place. That's going to be an interesting adjustment to watch for, hopefully, Lindholm, since he's gotten going offensively a little bit in game one. That can maybe help his confidence, especially because it feels like teams don't really respect Garland as a legit threat. They give him space. And I think it makes sense for the Canucks to experiment with another look, considering how much they've struggled on the man advantage. And then the other great news is that Tyler Myers was skating as well on his regular defense pair alongside Carson Soucy. So it sounds like he'll be ready to draw into the line for game three instead of Noah Juulsen.
And no other changes in the Canucks lineup. We're still seeing that Hoglander, Pettersson, Mikheyev line. That is courtesy of our friend Harmon Dial, who tweeted out the lines at practice day, doing his job today, doing the job because no one else is there yet. Jeff Patterson's in transit, folks. He's heading down there. He's going to be joining Harmon soon. Harm, let's start on the power play because it's something Irf and I talked about yesterday. You say teams aren't respecting Connor Garland on that side. You're right. But most importantly, Nashville Predators are not respecting Connor Garland on that side. And they've done a good job at neutralizing the Canucks power play. I've liked the looks that they've gotten, especially in game two. I thought they had some quality looks that maybe just didn't get finished and you needed some puck luck. And we talked about the importance of creating your own puck luck yesterday, but I like this move. I like this move a lot, getting Elias Lindholm there. As you mentioned, he's looked a lot better. It's really since the playoffs have begun. I'm wondering where he's going to be most effective on this power play, because if you think back to the conversations we had in like February when he was acquired, the conversations we were having were, okay, he's going to be great at the net front. He's going to maybe be able to play in the bumper. Where do you think he's going to play? Where do you think he's going to be most effective?
I think it still has to sort of, for him, be successful in that area, because I don't think you're going to get away from having Miller and Pettersson on the flanks. Look, lately we've seen the power play. They will rotate a lot, right? Sometimes we'll see Miller on the left flank. Sometimes it's Pettersson there. Lately we'd see Garland in the bumper sometimes. Like, this power play does move around. It does. It's not set in its 1-3-1, and this guy's got this spot, and he doesn't move from here. That guy has that spot. He doesn't move from there. But more often than not, I'd expect that Lindholm has to find success in that net front or bumper area, because, again, I think your power play, you need to have, in all likelihood, Miller and Pettersson on their flank sides. And even in practice today, that's where Lindholm seemed to be operating, in and around that inner slot area. I didn't see much of him on the flank. So, and also Tocchet specifically referenced, when I asked him about what the thought process was behind getting Lindholm there, his tips, right? So remember that when he first got there, Lindholm was still adjusting to a lot of different factors. He was trying to get his feet comfortable at 5-on-5. He was adjusting to new systems. There was a lot thrown at him all at once. Whereas now he only has to focus on one adjustment and one adjustment only. And that's becoming familiar with that first unit.
Harm, do you have any disagreement with the idea of not shaking up the lines? Like, seeing that Pettersson, Mikheyev, Hoglander trio together again, any disagreement there, or what do you think about that?
I don't hate it. I will say that the coaching staff needs a viable plan B, though. Like, they already need to, in their mind, have another idea of what they are going to look to if, let's say, Pettersson, for example, isn't able to get it going in game three. And one idea that Drance and I were kicking around yesterday before we boarded our flight to get to Nashville was, if you want to get Pettersson going, considering that he hasn't really been driving play 5-on-5 yet, and maybe he needs some help there, give him a little bit of spark. What if you look towards loading up your top six and have Pettersson with Joshua and Garland, where now Pettersson's job is just have fun with these guys. Just be a shooter here. They're going to do the heavy lifting in terms of forechecking, retrieving pucks, hopefully getting you some touches in a dangerous offensive situations. And then maybe you bump up Elias Lindholm to play with JT Miller and Brock Besser. And then maybe in terms of a potential third line, you go Hoglander, Suter, and Mikheyev, right? So that's another option. Like, yeah, that's another option to think of. And to me, again, sticking with the current lines, you could say they were strong territorially and controlling play 5-on-5 in game two. So maybe you don't want to shake things up. I get that. But you got to make that switch and that adjustment fast within the first 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes before the end of the first period. If you're not having success offensively, if Nashville's looking better than you, I think you got to go to the line blender.
Yeah. And this is from Dombey in the YouTube live chat. He said the lines are scrambling throughout the game anyways, regardless of the results. If you're not getting those results early, you can't be afraid to pull out the line blender early on. And I don't just want to see the lotto line for a few shifts. Like, I want to see different combinations. Excuse me. And I really like the ones that you just threw out there. Okay. Thatcher Demko, I want to get to this before Kevin Woodley joins us in about 5 minutes time. I want to get to this. This is a report from Rick. Oh, what just happened? Okay. Sorry. Am I the only one hearing this? Are you also hearing this?
No, I'm not hearing anything.
Okay. I know exactly what it is. Okay. All right. My apologies. It was the autoplay on the Canucks Army website, which I should know how the Canucks Army website. It was your voice, which is what confused me. It was a clip of you from an old Canucks convo talking, and I was like, oh, Harmon's got something he wants to say, and then I came back and your mouth wasn't moving. Anyways, apologies for that, folks. This is the report from Rick Dollywall, which I'm reading off the Canucks Army website. Demko traveled, and Dollywall's pointing out that him traveling and walking is a very positive sign. A lot of this is wait and see. We know he's not going to play in the Nashville series, but if they get to round two, this is from Dollywall, some feel he can play late in round two. Dollywall is hearing that he does not need surgery. We don't know about the time frame, but Dollywall says he's not hearing that it's going to be months and months and that it's anything serious. So that's good news. That's positive news. We don't know when he's going to return, but it is good news that he is traveling and that he's with the team. And Rick Tocchet mentioned this in his press conference. He knew early on that Demko was going to be able to travel after they got that MRI. Yes, he's been downgraded to week to week, which obviously isn't good, but you're hopeful. You're hopeful that maybe he can make a return in round two. But before we get there, obviously the Canucks need to get past the Nashville Predators. Harm, as we just wait for Woodley here, I want to ask you about a vibe check on this team. Like, I'm assuming you don't have anything else to say about Demko. Great that he's traveling, right? Yeah. Just a vibe check on this team. You're in Nashville. I know you've only been around them a little bit with being in Nashville specifically, but a vibe check on this series. How should Canucks fans be feeling right now about this series?
First of all, in terms of just what I saw at practice, it was focused, but lighthearted at the same time, right? Like, players had their moments where they were having laughs. Tocchet was laughing at one point. There was a point in the practice where I think Pettersson scored on the power play and there were some cheers. But yeah, that was the sort of vibe I got, was focused, but nobody's panicked or gripping the stick too tight. And that's what I want to see, honestly, considering the circumstances, is you're obviously dialed in. There's work to do at practice, and I don't know if we'll have time to get to it before Woodley arrives, but there was something around offensive zone sets they were working on that we can discuss and analyze and discuss further in terms of a potential adjustment we might see in game three. But the overall vibe from the team itself is pretty good, I think, considering the circumstances of you lost game two, you're without Thatcher Demko, obviously, and even just the way that you lost game two, it was sort of a frustrating way where you had your offensive looks, but couldn't find a way to translate all of those opportunities and all of that zone time to actually beating UC Saros. So I think that's a positive, but for the series as a whole, if I'm just analyzing it, it's not going to be an easy one to win, man. Like, I'm not all of a sudden down on this team or anything, but 1-1 and you're without your star goaltender, it's like, this is as close to a coin flip as it gets, in my opinion, when you look at how these teams match up on paper now, especially because the series shifts to Nashville now. It's going to be a big test, this these couple games on the road here, and we'll see if they can respond. They really need to sort their power play. They need to find an answer for Nashville fronting all of these pucks, pressuring the points and laying the body, because you can say all you want about, oh, we had all this zone time and you had great offensive looks. At the end of the day, you had less than 20 shots on UC Saros. You had 18 shots in a game where you trailed for most of the contest. Like, that's not close to good enough. It wasn't as if game two was one of those games where UC Saros stole it, right? He was sharp. He made some great saves, but he didn't, you didn't get goalied, right? And yep. So that's something that you're going to have to watch for as the series progresses.
Okay. Let's bring him in. Let's bring in Kevin Woodley. We'll get to those adjustments that you were talking about, Harm, afterwards. But Kevin Woodley, I should tell you, his appearance, our guest appearances on Thursday, are brought to you by our friends at Four Winds Brewing, more specifically, the Huff Gold Pilsner. If you like the Four Winds light but are looking for something with a bit more weight behind it, you should check out the Four Winds Huff Gold Pilsner. Brewed as an homage to great German pils that came before it, Huff Gold is crisp, clean, with a nice little European hop zip to round it all out. You can ask for Huff Gold anywhere you find Four Winds products, and it's also available online at fourwindsbrewing.ca for delivery anywhere in BC. I love the can art. I love the can art from our friends over at Four Winds Brewing, locally owned and operated in Delta. Check them out on River Road, Four Winds Brewing. All right, let's bring him in. Our goalie guru, as he keeps being called on social media, Kevin Woodley. Kevin, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
I'm a little offended. I'm being brought to you by something with a little more weight to it. I thought we were going to lay off the LBs that I'd gained in the last little while here. I don't know, quads. It's going to cost you a few beers introducing me that way, buddy.
Who would you rather be sponsored by, Wendy's or them? Because Frank complains that he's always brought to you by Wendy's.
Yeah, no, I'm taking the beer company every time.
There you go. Okay, Kevin. Goaltending is obviously at the forefront of this series now. We were just talking about how UC Soros did not steal game two from the Canucks. But before we get to goaltending, because obviously we're going to talk a lot about that, what did you make of the Canucks' performance in game two and the potential adjustments that need to be made?
Well, it's interesting enough, like he didn't have to steal game two, but there was a save he made early in that game on Pew Suter that might answer both our questions. Because I do think, like, just as you give Demko credit for the save he made on Beauvillier potentially being a game changer for game one, that one that Saros made on Suter was, like, that was a hell of a save, especially because of all the bodies in front of him and the fact that he didn't see that puck go wide, didn't see it come off the boards. As a goaltender, when you lose it like that, one of the things you're looking for is, where's everyone else going? And so you're trying to read off those cues. And UC told me after the game that he reacted purely based on what he saw Suter doing. And that's how he anticipated where that puck was going. And then just to have the explosiveness to get, you know, to get a pad there and get it across. And if you're Suter, you got it. Hey, man, like anything over 11 inches is in the net there. So, and I think that was a key play, because when we talk about adjustments and the way that Nashville and is fronting some of the traffic that Vancouver likes to create, because don't forget, like, Vancouver has been very effective at creating point shots with layered screens. It talks about levels. It's an effective way. It can be an effective way to create offense. And one of the counters, however, like, they're not dropping bombs back there, right? Like, they're not setting up Philip Hronek for like monster one tees. It's more of a finesse pucks to the net from especially guys like Hughes that are so good at moving, creating lanes, and then finding lanes with his wrist shot. But guess what? Those, they hurt. I'm not going to pretend it doesn't require a level of bravery to get in front of them, but you're not taking your life in your hands. You know what I mean? Like, that's an easier shot to front as a defender than, like I said, Hronek dropping the hammer or Petey dropping the hammer, you know, off the flank on the power play. Like, think of all those shot blocks that Nashville had the other night. There was only one by McDonough that I recall, you know, getting up slowly from and sort of, you know, paying a price, taking a piece out of the defender with it. So because of the nature of that offense, it's easy to front on it. They've done an effective job of it. Now, one of the counters, I think, when Tocchet talked about there were some looks we had and some things we could do, one of them, I think, may have been that play like the one that Suter failed to convert, where if you go off net low and get a puck off the end boards, you can find layers behind that fronted defense and create those chances down low. And I know people are probably tearing their hair out. Like, they missed the net how many times? And you're telling me you want them to miss it on purpose a few more? I'm not saying that's the only play, but I do think that might be one of the things that Tocchet was talking about that they can look for to sort of solve. And if so, you want to get into those boards in Smashville and see how that puck comes off it and make sure everybody's comfortable. Goalies always do it early in morning skates, see how the rims go, things like that. How's the puck going to play off the boards? If you're a defenseman of your forwards, you want to be testing that tomorrow morning at the morning skate to make sure you're comfortable with how it's going to come off, how it's going to react. Is it hot? Is it dead? Things like that. If it's a play, it's not like I expect them to do this a ton, but it's one you can look for every once in a while.
Besides that play off the end boards potentially that you mentioned, what other adjustment can the Canucks make to Nashville's approach? Because it isn't just that they block a ton of shots and are getting in these lanes. They seem to be pressuring the points a lot more aggressively than other teams did against Vancouver in the regular season.
Well, I mean, take a look at the goal that sort of that changed things. The Suter tip, in on the forecheck, Besser gets it up high really quick. And that was one of the few times where we did see that lane open. And that was because of the low high transition there. So off the forecheck, back up the high. So working the puck low to high, but also not being able, like it can't be the default. It can't always be dump it back in behind the net and then go back up to the point. Indirect passes off the boards that allow Hughes to get into his wheelhouse faster, as opposed to sort of having to wait for a pass. And then working it down low and attacking down low. We saw some near misses off that. You can attack Saros directly from above the goal line on sharp angles. He's not the largest goaltender. The temptation will be to go short side high, and certainly that's a play that can be there at times if you get it just above the goal line. But I think because of that, watching him in practice, there's a tendency to want to sort of get the head up and lean that up into the post. And what does that do? That exposes sort of just over the pads on the blocker side, on the far side, if you're tacking on the glove. And so if you can pull that back up just even to the bottom of the dot, you can look to exploit that. So I just like to see them attack the net more. And it matters, especially if you get other bodies there too, to sort of create secondary chances and even pucks that just go off. And there were a few, they just happened to go off and hit posts. But, clearly you can't live and die with soft, find the lane point shots if the Predators continue to be so effective at taking them away.
Okay, at the other end of the ice, Kevin, what did you think of Casey Smith in game two?
I mean, you couldn't have scripted a worse start, just in terms of the bounce, the timing. Early in a game under that pressure, you're going to be a little, you're probably going to be a little more over aggressive. You're going to be a little, I don't say on edge, because that implies that, you're nervous, but I just think you're more likely to be a little more active early in the game like that. And so the first shot, he reads backdoor tip. And so he wants to get there and he makes a push. And the one part that he talked about in the postgame that I didn't see in real time, and I'm not sure I saw it as a talking point elsewhere enough, frankly, was Casey's so good moving around on his knees, at times powerfully enough that it takes him out of plays, but he slides to his left. He's still going to get back and make that save on the right. And if you watch, he actually slips out, and his left skate, when he goes to make a push, he just loses an edge. I'm not sure if he caught a piece of soft ice. I'm not sure. If he just, in a bit of a rush, didn't grab the edge fully, or even the fact he has somewhat new, I was a little surprised, actually, to be honest, those pads, I didn't see them till like last week. So brand new pads, a little crispier, maybe a little less soft on the bottom, just prevents him from getting the edge he would normally get and make that save. So combination is sort of a little over aggressive on the first slide, and then uncharacteristically not being able to grab and load up a push edge and slipping out like that. Just, like I said, you couldn't script it a worse start. Beyond that, I don't fault them on the Forsberg. Yeah, both guys go to the back door, so it's one-on-one with a 48-goal score. Maybe knowing that both guys have sort of backed off to take away the pass option, you'd like to stay on the short side a little more aggressively, force him to move it around you rather than giving up his forehand side. But that's pick and nits, man. That's a pure goal scorer one-on-one. And then, the rebound off the rush is, this is going to be a factor and has been in Casey's game, even in the best games of the year. There's going to be some secondary chances. He does produce a lot of rebounds. I don't think they're all bad rebounds. I think he does a very nice job of keeping a lot of tough chances in front of him. But we talked about it as soon as the switch was made, the importance of making sure you're taking care of those second opportunities in front of him as a defense core.
How long of a leash would you have for DeSmith, not only in game three, but through the rest of the series?
Oh, Harm, that's a tough one, because I think it all depends on the circumstances, right? Like if he were to really be settled in for the first two periods, and say there's a 5-minute stretch where things come unraveled early in the third, then the first two periods matter. Because the reality of throwing Arturs in there is this is all new to him too. So all those nerves and that extra energy that I just talked about Casey having, You know, he's going to have that twofold because he's never done it before. He doesn't have the same experience. Not to say he can't, not to say you might get some found money there if he reacts the right way. He certainly had big moments on big stages with Latvia and the World Championships. But ignoring Casey's experience, ignoring how new this would be to Arturs, could also be a mistake as well. And so I expect it to be a long leash. Frankly, I think he earned the long leash in the Edmonton game. This is a different conversation, to be perfectly honest, if not for that Edmonton game. But I was really impressed with how he bounced back, how he played. But in talking to him afterwards, what he went through mentally to get to that spot and get that trust back in his game, it wasn't an easy process, but it spoke to a maturity and, like I said, an experience that the other guy just doesn't have at this point. I just shouldn't say maturity, but experience that Arturs doesn't have at this point.
The whole reason we're talking about any of this is Thatcher Demko's out with another injury that we suspect is a knee injury, Kevin. The video seems to suggest it happened in the final 48 seconds of game one. Can you tell us anything about the injury? Should fans at all be worried at this point about Thatcher Demko's knees or just his ability to stay healthy?
No, I understand those questions. I don't, like I said, a lot of the reporting's been done on how long it's going to be. You know, I concur with not expecting to see him back. It's the same knee in a short period of time. You know, even though it is a different injury to the knee, like, you're still talking about a joint that's been impacted a couple of times here in a couple of months. So I think in terms of, should you be worried, if you're expecting him back soon, I think that might be, you know, premature. But long-term, yeah, I don't know. I don't know the name. It's tough. I don't know what the injury is exactly, so I can't say. There's nothing I've heard that leads me to believe this is like, oh man, like, this could be it, or this could be like a devastating long-term injury. That's not what we're dealing with here. It's just the timing sucks. At least that's not my impression of what we're dealing with here. It's just the timing sucks, and it means he's not going to be available. I really doubt, given the back-to-back nature of these things, I can't see it, you know, before the conference final, and that may even be a stretch. So, I get the long-term questions. I understand some of the, you know, the questioning about how often he's been injured, but I really do look at a lot of these as the same injury, right? Like, I know it's a different part of the knee, but the fact is he rushed back to be here, which he should, you know, everybody was applauding him for and all the work he put in to get back. But there, I guess, you know, even myself watching him fly around the rink and how good he looked and how good he said he felt and how he wasn't worried about the joint, worried about his knee, I felt like, you know, these were all good things that he was able to do this and get back for the playoffs. But I guess anytime you return, you know, ahead of schedule, you know, the human body takes time to heal. And so there was always this risk. I was ignorant to it a little bit, like, just saying, hey, he's back, don't worry about it. You look at that save on Bavilia and you're like, he's 100%. Like, look at that. That's remarkable. But I guess if the joint doesn't fully heal, then there's always a risk. And we saw the effect of it. It's the same way I look at the injury last year. People are like, oh, you know, he was hurt 2 years ago and then he was hurt last year. Same injury. Not different injury, but not getting through the first one properly led to the second one directly. You know, and I honestly don't believe that's all on him. I think there were some things missed in the recovery process, you know, in terms of the mechanics of the way he was moving that were there that weren't addressed, that could have been addressed, that ultimately led to the second injury. So people look at them as four different injuries over a course of 2 years, 3 years, I guess now, and say he's injury prone. I look at a guy who they played the wheels off of 2 years for Bruce Boudreau, led to a knee injury, led directly to a groin injury, see those intertwined, and see the same thing here with two knee injuries. And maybe you could make the argument, given how much they played him after the All-Star break, that contributed to the first one as well.
So, sorry, Harm, I have a question about this. I just want to follow up on it, Kevin. Is there anything the Canucks should be doing different aside from giving him more rest, but like, do they have to prioritize going to get a true 1B and managing his workload better in the season? Like, what's the answer here? Is there anything Thatcher can do differently? Is there anything the team should be doing differently? Like what's the road ahead here?
Well, I think Thatcher already did things differently after the last time, right? Like, changed the way he works off ice. And I think he felt really good about those things. And we've seen other guys that have made those changes have, you know, lots of success and not as many injuries. In terms of what they can do, yeah, like, you know, it's not like it's really easy to point at it now and say, yeah, you only played 49 games, workload wasn't an issue. But what was the pace before the injury? What was the pace between the All-Star game and the injury? Were there some starts in there that you probably could have argued he didn't need to make? I'm not entirely sure. And I'm not being critical of the decisions that were made. I should actually be really careful with that. But I'm saying it's a fair question at this point, just because of what's happened. In terms of Thatcher, like, if there is a stone left to be turned over to figure this out, trust that he will. Could it be as simple as equipment? Not to blame it, but at a time when you're seeing a lot of lower body injuries, would I be moving? I literally had to cut off a call just a minute ago with the goaltender that I was doing an interview with and some pro reads and breakdowns with, an NHL goaltender that switched out of the same skate that Thatcher wears because there's no give in the product and all that energy. And that's why goalies love it, because they move their foot and it transfers right to the ice. There's no give. Everything transfers directly. But that lack of give tends to move up the chain. And this goalie, for him, it was ankles. Had ankle problems in that one-piece skate, moved out of it, isn't having them anymore. Other guys say their knees and hips don't hurt as much. I just think, given the nature of the injuries over the last couple of years, if that's a stone he should maybe consider turning over and trying something with a little more give in it. Maybe your movements aren't quite as crisp, but it's not putting near as much demand on your lower body in particular. That'd be the one thing I think I'd look at.
Big picture, when you look at the series, how do you look at Vancouver's chances tied 1-1 without Demko? Like, what would you look at as the strongest case in favor of Vancouver right now, and maybe the strongest case in favor of Nashville outside of the goaltending?
Well, the strongest case in favor of Vancouver is how they played defensively, especially in game two. Like, I know that they didn't create quality like we'd like to see. And they needed to do a few things differently, obviously, in terms of managing the way Nashville was defending and blocking shots, right? So you expect that adjustment, but they gave up nothing. You know, as Rick Tocchet said, like, four or five chances, he'll take that all playoffs long. And I think it's actually the same, that same answer is the flip side, Harm, because are they going to be able to do that? Are they going to be able to negate Nashville off the rush to that degree the rest of the way, right? Like, we saw it early in the first game. And so I think you take game two, as much as this will be hard for Canucks fans to hear. And yeah, there were some score effects in there for sure. But controlling play to that degree, you take it. The question to me is like in some ways, Casey wasn't, it was just a couple of moments, but he wasn't overly tested. He wasn't under barrage. Like, the Nashville didn't generate. We heard about how incredible this team was in the second half of the season and all the offense they generated. We haven't seen that yet, outside of maybe some chances that nearly materialized or some rush chances that came close in the first period and a bit of the first game. And so if Nashville manages to start generating that, or if the Canucks open up in pursuit of offense and start giving that back on the counter, which would be really uncharacteristic of them. But if that were to happen, I'm not sure what this looks like, and can Casey hold up to that against a team that scored, a ton of goals down the stretch? Same with the power play. Like, the PK made one mistake in the first game. Carson Soucy, me and him talked about it the next day for a PK story I was doing. He just got a little over aggressive at the line. It was a bit of a broken entry, and he thought he could break it up the line, and that left Tyler Myers sort of when he didn't, left Myers a little exposed on a 2-1 one down low. And my knee jerk was, oh, here we go. Like, we heard about this great power play, and now the first opportunity with it, a minute in, it's in the back of your net. Since then, they haven't got a sniff on the power play. So again, like, that's a good thing for Vancouver. The PK has been excellent, but if Nashville starts to move the puck around like they were in the second half of the season and solves that and forces, you need more out of your goaltending, is it there? So a lot of questions yet to be answered, Harmon. I think a lot of the positives for the Vancouver Canucks, I sort of look at it both ways. Keep it up, great, even if you didn't win game two, but what happens if you can't?
Kevin, good stuff as always, man. We'll be sure to check in with you again during the playoffs, because this story is not yet fully written.
Okay, a little more weight to it, Harm. That would be me, but go easy on me on the introductions next time, boys. I expect the delivery of that delicious sounding beer to make up for that shot I know you were taking.
Deal. You know what? That you got a deal, Kevin. You got a deal. Thanks for joining us, man. Appreciate it.
Take care, guys.
Awesome.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Kevin Woodley, you can find his work at In Goal Meg, a lot of good stuff. And he mentioned the Pro Read series, really, really good stuff. They chat with NHL goaltenders about what they're seeing on certain plays. Really good stuff. I just want to take a victory lap. I was professional enough not to do it while Kevin was on the call. I told you so. I told all of you so. I brought up the One Piece skates 2 days ago. People were saying Quads is in denial. Here come the conspiracy theories. I was bang on. I was absolutely correct. So, Harmon, your reaction to me being right?
Well, I never criticized you at the time. I literally, you'll remember, I said, I don't have a take because it's the first time I'm hearing this theory. And I don't know for better or for worse if you're onto something here, but I'm glad to hear. I'm proud of you, man. I'm happy. And I definitely like this scenario much more than if Kevin had come in and said, what conspiracy theory are you on about, Quads?
Yeah. Kevin, let's talk about his blocker.
But that's also, you can't take that victory lap without also acknowledging that on Tuesday, you were like, worst case scenario, he's only out for the series. And now we open up Thursday's show, and it's like, good news, he's at least walking.
Well, I was just saying, okay, you're right. Worst case scenario was not the correct wording, but nailed it on the One Piece skate thing. So we'll see. We'll see. And for those that missed it, Kevin talked about it. I talked about it a couple days ago. This idea that these One Piece skates, which are very flush to the foot, like they're very form fitting. Your toes are like pushed right up against it. There's not much give there. So I was just saying, based on my experience wearing small shoes, like if you got small shoes, you're feeling a lot more force on your toes, especially if you're like jumping or running. And, you know, when you're doing such explosive movements like you are on the ice, you know, you've got those skates. I don't know. And Kevin brought it up. So Kevin talked about it a little bit more than I did. So anyways, it was interesting to hear that from Kevin. Okay. Did you have anything else that you want? Oh, let's just get to anyone else. Cause I know you wanted to talk about, some more stuff from Canucks practice and, the Canucks adjustments that need to be made. Before we get to anyone else, got to tell you about the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Each game day, answer four questions, pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, and choose the highest scoring period. Daily winners snag gift cards while each round's champs pocket cash. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess. It's fast, it's fun, and it's all about hockey. All right, Harm, I'm excited to get to this. I'm expecting to look in that YouTube live chat and see everybody saying, wow, Quads was right, I was wrong. I should listen to this show way more often, and I should take everything Quad says at face value. Because now it's time for anyone else. Presented by the Vancouver Canadiens, the Seas are back at the Nat. Catch fireworks, giveaways, Friday nooners, and superstar appearances all spring and summer long. Harm, did you see this? May 7th is the first superstar appearance. Marco Estrada is going to be at Nat Bailey Stadium. Man, am I... Do you know Marco Estrada?
I know. I actually do. Yeah.
One of the best changeups I've ever seen. Marco Estrada, a huge part of those 2015-2016 teams, really emerged out of nowhere after a stint in Milwaukee. He was absolutely awesome. Or did he Did he play in Milwaukee after? I don't know. But Marco Estrada is going to be there. Blue Jays legend in my mind, the king of the changeup. I'll tell you what, if I had a kid, I'd be going there. Don't let your kids throw curveballs, kids or parents. Go up to Marco Estrada and say, hey, how can I get my kid to throw a better changeup? Won't hurt their arm. That's what you want to do. Okay, Marco Estrada, May 7th. I'm getting off topic. The C's have a couple more days left in their current homestand. Don't miss the Nooner at the Net on Friday, April 26th, or Family Fun Sunday on the 28th, where kids 12 and under will get to run the bases. For tickets, call 604-872-5232 or go to CanadiansBaseball.com. Did you ever get to run the bases at Nat Bailey Stadium?
No, I didn't. Did you?
I did. I did. Yeah, I did.
Well, that's awesome.
Last
How'd
week.
How'd you do?
I don't know. It's not like a... I think I did great. It wasn't like a timed competition.
Is it like a race? Like a
no,
bunch of kids?
No.
Oh, no. Just it's one just kid? Like, you're like on your
no,
own?
No. It's like 30 kids, but you're all running at the same time. And there's no... Or like 100. I don't know. There's no structure to it. It's literally like they let you go, you know, all together basically. And you're not... In my experience, you don't get to touch every base because there's so many kids. But like I was slowing down so that I could make sure I touched every base. But a lot of kids just ran the infield. It's still really cool. Still really cool to be on the field there. So yeah, be sure to go check out CanadiansBaseball.com for tickets. Okay. Yeah, now I'm tempted to talk about Marco Estrada, but I'm not going to. Let's get to anyone else. Harm, you had something that you wanted to get to, but we were a little tight for time with Woodley joining us. So what was it that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, so Canucks spent a lot of time, it felt like, in practice working on different offensive zone sets. Had a couple of different drills and looks. One of them was a simple, I think, just emphasizing when you're out of the corner, trying to take it straight to the net, sort of similar to what Woodley was mentioning there. And then the other thing that I noticed, I'm curious to see if they'll try and translate it to the game, is I'll give an example of it that I saw. Just because it will be easier to explain. So they'll have like a dump in from the left side. Winger will recover the puck. So it was Hoglander in this situation. And he makes that low to high pass back to the point, right? That to this point, everything is normal, usual. From that standpoint, usually when Hoglander makes that pass up to, let's say, Hughes at the left point, Hoglander will go straight to the net or he'll go to the high slot. And he's in a mode where he's looking for tips, redirections, the layered screens, right? On this play instead, Hoglander made that pass back to Hughes. Hughes would pass to Hronek, and Hoglander would come up high. And so you'd have three players essentially high in the offensive zone. And then Hronek would whip a pass across to Hoglander, and Hoglander would sort of attack downhill, sort of like you would on a power play as one of the flank players. And I think what the Canucks are trying to accomplish with that adjustment is that instead of having all of your forwards clogged on the inside and having a ton of traffic, because of course, if you have three of your forwards all in that area, you're also going to attract a lot of the opposition's players there. So that could be part of the reason in terms of being too bunched up, clogging that middle of the ice, having it difficult to get shots through. I wonder if the thought process there is, let's stretch the offensive zone so we have a little bit more space. And so that defenseman, after Hoglander retrieves the puck in that hypothetical scenario, has to decide, do I stay near the net where I'm supposed to be, or do I follow Hoglander high up into the zone? If he follows Hoglander high up into the zone, great. All of a sudden, now you have more space down low around the slot where you're actually trying to create offense. If that defender doesn't follow Hoglander up to the zone and sort of stays in and around that down low slot area, well, then at least you've changed the angle of attack and you have a forward sort of coming downhill at a different angle to introduce some type of wrinkle. So that was an interesting offensive set that they ran in a drill several times. And I'm, again, curious to see if they try and utilize that to counter how aggressively Nashville has been pressuring the points and blocking shots.
Yeah, it's interesting because like the book on UC Saros is get traffic in front of them and good things will happen. But when they're blocking shots the way they are, you need to figure something else out. To be honest, I really liked what Kevin was saying about those forwards just being a little bit quicker. And again, not intentionally shooting wide, but as we learned last game, shots are going to miss the net. So having those forwards kind of be down low and already ready to go to take those caroms off the boards, or even just pucks in traffic, right? Having those forwards just be a little bit more ready and a little bit more aggressive. I think there's so many adjustments they can make, but that's a really interesting observation from practice. Let's get to the YouTube live chat here. I saw one that I want to talk about because for as much as we've talked about Elias Pettersson struggling, Nils Höglander has also had some struggles in these playoffs. And Jeff Patterson wrote about this, did a really good job over at Canucks Army yesterday. But I wanted to find this. Where was it? Yeah, here we go. This one from Butman. Is Höglander's size hindering him in the playoffs, or is it lack of experience, or is it something else? Harm, I'm curious to get your take on this because I really don't think it's lack of size. It just seems like he's not being as aggressive as we've seen before. And there's been maybe a couple instances where good body positioning by the Nashville defense. Let's make no mistake about it. You've got guys like Roman Josi, Ryan McDonough. It ain't their first rodeo. It ain't their first rodeo back there. And they're making things happen. So I saw a couple instances last game where Höglander's going in and one of those guys, McDonough or Josi, is just protecting the puck so well that Höglander just can't get to it. And usually he's really good at overcoming that. But when you're going up against defensemen like McDonough, like Josi, sometimes you're going to struggle. So I really don't think it's a lack of size.
Yeah, I don't think it's a lack of size, but for whatever reason, for Höglander to be at his best, he has to look like he's shot out of a cannon and he has to be disruptive, forcing battles, making it difficult for defensemen on zone exits. And it just sort of feels like he hasn't been noticeable from that perspective. It's as if he's been a little bit like a fraction of a second too late to pressure pucks. He hasn't been able to create chaos, right? Höglander is an agent of chaos for offense in the attacking zone in a positive way. And there's just been no chaos, it feels like. And without that chaos, it's not as if Höglander is a player that is dynamic with the puck and he's transporting it up the ice and is going to make pretty plays off the rush. That's not how he generates the majority of his offense. The majority of his value is A, I'm going to be an absolute pain in the neck on the forecheck, and B, I fight for inside position in the slot. I clean up the garbage. I set screens, tips, deflections. And C is just like a supplementary tool. He makes quick decisions and plays with the puck when he does get it. And it feels like in all three of those areas, for whatever reason, I'm not sure why. I can't pinpoint an exact reason for it, but those are the three areas that we're not seeing enough from him so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we don't know what it's going to take, but they're going with the same trio. Irf and I talked about it yesterday, potentially moving away from that. I think I agree with you, Harm. The biggest thing is that they need to be ready to make adjustments if it's necessary in tomorrow's game. Note the start time tomorrow, folks, and we're going to do a pregame show tomorrow. 4:30 start time Pacific, of course. 4:30 Pacific start time tomorrow, and then Sunday, a 2 p.m. start to Game 4 of this series. So that's not great, but note the start time there, folks, because if you blink, you might just miss it. But Friday 4:30 tomorrow is the start time, so important to note that. Okay, Harm, this one from the YouTube live chat, where was it? Here it is. Okay, Jesse C, if the power play bombs in this series, do you think Tocchet regrets not even getting a look at Phil Kessel, or was trusting this group the right call over trying to fit Phil in?
No, I don't think that Kessel would have been the answer. I mean, he was productive, but you even think back to Vegas. Vegas is a team that for a long time had a struggling power play in the playoffs. Phil Kessel wasn't the answer in terms of solving that on the first unit. So no, I don't think they have any regrets about Phil Kessel.
We didn't talk about Pettersson very much, Harm. Irf and I did yesterday, but I'm curious to get your thoughts on him. This one from Karen Versation, regular listener of the show. Pettersson is so snake bitten, man. It's so tough watching bubble videos of him. I wonder if he'll actually do better without the big lights in Vancouver and a slightly different environment in Nashville on the road.
Yeah, you hope so. Because, look, there's a stretch there of a handful of minutes and in the middle of that second period where that game changed and it just sort of encapsulated almost the story of game two, which is Philip Forsberg. We mentioned it earlier. Kevin touched on it as well. Preds didn't have a lot of scoring chances, but when Forsberg had an opportunity, he made that game-changing play. Like that one superstar type moment where he took advantage of a mismatch against Noah Juulsen and just undressed Smith completely, made that elite difference maker type of play. And then minutes later, it's Nashville's 3-0 goal, which starts with a Pettersson turnover in the defensive zone, him then stumbling, and then he can't clear the rebound that DeSmith leaves. That kind of sums up one of the important factors of that game too, is Vancouver's top players weren't, yes, they had zone time, they had opportunities, but they couldn't make that one game-changing play. Whereas Nashville's, they saw that one opportunity and took it. And I mean, not to sort of move away from Pettersson too much here, but another point that should be made, often offensive zone draw in that situation, Nashville's top line, Vancouver's last change, I don't think Noah Juulsen should have been on the ice for that. It wasn't an icing situation. I think that's a mistake for the coaching staff, especially considering how that play unfolded and how Forsberg took advantage of Juulsen there. But anyway, going back to Pettersson, when I'm watching him now, I mean, there are a few things that come to mind. First, it just feels like everything to do with his finishing and shooting is just off right now. When he's at his best, he is so surgical. He is so precise, so accurate. Whereas now it feels like his shot selection is off sometimes, where on the power play, for example, especially in that first period, he would be shooting in situations where the lane was taken away and he'd get his shots blocked or he'd miss the net and Nashville would get clear. So plays would kind of die on a stick in that way. But then there would also be situations where he's passing up a shot when he should be shooting. And there are also situations where JT Miller finds him with a dangerous cross ice pass, but he bobbles the puck and he takes an extra fraction of a second to settle it. And by the time he settles it, that defenseman on Nashville has taken away that shooting lane and it's not, the scoring chances effectively died right there. So everything to do with loading up into that shot to then actually executing seems off the mark. And that's, of course, in addition to him not looking dynamic as a puck transporter, as a play driver right now. It's definitely concerning, and they're going to need, whether it's game three or game four, like they're going to need him at some point to really take this series and sort of do, like, I remember in the bubble, there would be the odd game in a series where even outside of just, hey, producing, he would put the team on his back. And we haven't seen any of those signature plays from him yet. And if it's not Pettersson at some point, then it's going to have to be a JT Miller or a Quinn Hughes, because for as much offensive zone time as Miller and Hughes have had, or even Brock Besser, a 40-goal scorer, none of those guys have had enough game-changing plays either. Like, one of these top guys has to step up.
Yeah, and I mean, what I said yesterday, Harm, was that they're going to be without Thatcher Demko in this series, and he's a key player for them. They can't be without any more key players if they want to win this series. Like, their other key players need to be present. They need to be difference makers in this series. Okay, I quickly wanted to get this also, in yesterday. Yeah, yeah.
Like, one more thing. I haven't been able to get it officially confirmed or anything, and I know it's a time of year where a bunch of guys are banged up, but I really wouldn't be surprised if Pettersson's playing through something. There's some rumblings that you kind of hear. Again, nothing confirmed. I don't want this to end up on Twitter or anything, but I really wonder if that's part of the story too. Not that that's an excuse, because you still need to find a way to produce anyway, but also something to keep in mind.
Yeah, Jeff Patterson even pointed out on Rinkwide. We talked about it yesterday. Patterson was taping up that wrist. So again, not reporting anything, but we saw him taping his wrist. So do with that what you will. I quickly wanted to get this in before we wrap up, before we get to our Bet365 bet of the day. Bob Cole passed away today, and I just wanted to give a special, you know, make sure we mention it, because Bob Cole was a huge part. And again, there's a big age difference between me and a lot of our listeners, but I bet a lot of our older listeners could say the exact same thing, that Bob Cole was a big part of their childhood. I remember listening to Bob Cole basically my entire life, listening to hockey. Bob Cole was the voice of that, and I really wanted to give him kind of a special shout out, especially you know, just after hearing all the memories, and we did something at Canucks Army, a tribute to him, where we look back at some of his greatest calls. And yeah, I just wanted to make sure we mentioned that. And I guess in a similar light as well, I also wanted to mention it's the 5-year anniversary of Jason Botchford passing away. Obviously, a huge mentor for you, Harm. I've talked about the Botchford Project, Cat Botchford, their whole family, how much that has impacted my career. But I wanted to make sure we got that in today.
Yeah, beautifully said. I mean, even with Bob Cole today, Tockett was asked about that. And I think he referenced one of the calls that he'll always remember is a fight. I think he mentioned the one against Wendell Clark. I'm not 100% sure, but just how, for Tockett being an Ontario kid, how much it meant to him to have a signature sort of a call that, that he remembers from Bob Cole. And of course, I mean, like hearing all the playoff games he would call nationally growing up as a kid too, like he was one of the best in the business, and definitely a really sad day.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, yeah, like I said, Jason Botchford as well, 5-year anniversary. We will always remember to do our Deeks. And there's no way to pivot off that, but have to do it. Have to get in our Bet365 bet of the day before we wrap it up. Again, like I said, folks, we'll be back tomorrow. Harm will be in that same hotel room. It's going to be a good time. Okay, our Bet365 bet of the day. Let me find it here. Yeah, Bet365 is joining us for the playoffs, and we are very, very excited about it. You can use the code VANBONUS for your first sign-up. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Download the app today. Okay, our Bet365 bet of the day. Grady, I forgot what it was. Can you pull it up? There it is. The swinging A's. I'm wearing the hat today. The Oakland Athletics to take down those New York Yankees today. And folks, this isn't just a crazy bet that I'm throwing out there. Well, it kind of is, plus 220 odds. The Oakland Athletics are one of the worst teams in baseball. The Yankees are one of the best, but they've got Nestor Cortez on the mound. Cortez has been very hit or miss. He's a lefty on the bump. The swinging A's have a lot of righties. They're going to be without Zach Gelof, who I have in every fantasy league I'm in. But I like that pick. I like that pick. Big value pick for the Oakland Athletics to take down the New York Yankees. If you choose to play, please play responsibly. Okay, close it out there. Yeah.
What's up with you in supporting bad baseball teams?
I really feel for A's fans, right? Like, again, I wear the A's hat. It's not because I love what's happening with the A's, but they're such a storied franchise. And like, Harm, I'll put this in perspective for you. Like, I'll try to put this in perspective in hockey terms. This would basically be like, I don't know, who's a team that's had a lot of success? Like, a lot of success, and then they've just been bad for years. And I don't know, like, okay, let's put it this way, Harm. This is like if the Arizona, everything that happened with the Arizona Coyotes happens, but the Arizona Coyotes have had, like, two dynasties in their past, or they've won a bunch of Stanley Cups, and they have a supportive fan base, but then the ownership comes in, stops spending money, so fans stop spending money and coming out to the ballpark, and then ownership says, okay, well, clearly there's no fan interest here. We're going to pack up and move. We're going to go to Vegas. That would be exact. That's like hockey terms. So I feel for the fans. I feel for the fans. I love A's fans. I'm wearing the hat because of A's fans.
Here I was just trying to trip you about your Mariners and your A's, and now you make me feel like a douche forever giving you crap about that.
That's right. Don't you forget it either. Hey, don't put the Mariners and the Athletics in the same breath. Come on now. They're not nearly as bad as the A's.
Dude, I can't recall them ever making the playoffs since I've, I don't know, been alive.
Well, you're wrong, because yes, they did have a long drought from 2001 until 2021.
Yeah,
they didn't make the playoffs. But they did, and they were very close last year. They missed it by like two games last year. Get this.
That sounds like every year. Oh, we just missed by a few games.
It's true, man. It's true. Okay. Anyways, we'll close it out there. For my co-host, Harmon Dial, and our technical producer, Grady Sass, my name is Dave Guglielli. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of The Canucks Conversation.
Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads, brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range, since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back, and still be home in time for the game. Now, that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.